listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. You know, one of my favorite things every year is March Madness, but for the people that serve and attend the New Mexico legislative session, that name March Madness takes on a whole different meaning. Madness at the legislature, and our guest today is Paul Gessing, who's been deeply involved with all the legislation.
Pretty good, Jim, and some years we have March Madness in March because it's a 60-day session. This year, March Madness ends in February, and we'll have some bill signings and other things. But we are past the 30-day legislative session. It's in the books.
And you told me right before the show started that it could have been worse. And I guess that's an apt description.
Could have been a lot worse. Yeah. It, for a variety of reasons, wound up being a pretty decent session overall, certainly considering makeup in the session. They did relatively minimal harm, and even some good things happened this session. It's nice to be able to say that once in a while.
Hey, I have to tell you about a term that I've got to let you know about. Of course, your kids got to go to school this morning without masks on. Did that make you happy?
Oh, it made me happy. It made them happy. Mom happy. We're all very pleased with that. It's a great day. Yesterday was a very good day in New Mexico. I'll just say that.
Yeah. What an announcement. Well, the quote I want to tell you is from Mike Howell. He's a senior advisor with the Heritage Foundation. And he said to me, he has been face free during the entire pandemic. So the Gessing family is now face free.
Yeah. And of course, as an adult, you have a little more leeway. You can choose to not go into a business. You can choose to go into a business. And if they tell you to mask up, you can turn the other direction. And that's all well and good. But for kids in New Mexico in particular, it's been hard to avoid being forced to put a mask on. And that's why it's so critical for the household and for so many families across the state of New Mexico to be able to have facial freedom.
I have to ask you, if you think the science has now changed and that's why we don't have to wear a mask, or is this purely politically motivated?
I would say that it's 95% politically motivated. And yes, my children are not average children, but yesterday when I picked my two daughters up at the Catholic school downtown, the 9-year-old said, those Democrats, as soon as an election rolls around, they start trying to do some good things. And I just thought, well, my daughter fully understands the political process in this state and in this country, and she's 9 years old. So, you know, one of the bills, and I know we're going to talk about bills, is 16 and 17-year-olds voting was considered. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is that we have a system where an arbitrary number is all you get. You don't know if the 16-year-old is a serious student reading up the Constitution and the documents of the founding and following politics or not. And it's the way it is. It's not very easy to change. But I jokingly, in some of my online philosophical duels with supporters of those kinds of bills, said, old and my 12-year-old are more knowledgeable, not just than 16 and 17-year-olds, than probably most adults. So why are we just talking about 16-year-olds? And I didn't get very far with that, although the 16 and 17-year-old provisions were pulled out of a bill that subsequently died, as you may be aware. Senator Bill Scherer from Farmington, a Republican, he did the filibuster routine yesterday, hurtled to a close, and the bill on voting rights and voting, you know, kind of expansion, lack of accountability was the bill that was really on the table at that point. So he prevented that bill from passing.
Well, Paul, as we start to talk about bills and what actually happened in a legislative session, I saw you on TV and you were talking about a dummy bill. And I need you to explain to us, what is a dummy bill and how is it used as a tool?
Well, as much as we sometimes like to talk about legislators being dummies, these dummy bills are simply bills that are left available to be reworked as the session goes along. The legislature is a funny kind of outfit, and I think, you know, Christians who follow the Ten Commandments, there's a famous line, some comedian from back in the day said, you know, he's always walking around with a Bible, and people ask him, why are you running around with a Bible? You're not much of a Christian. And he said, I'm looking for loopholes. And I think it was W.C. Fields, maybe, but, unfortunately, that's the way the legislative process often works. They impose rules on themselves, and then they avoid them some way. So a dummy bill is a effort to circumvent a legislative deadline process. So you introduce a bill with no text that can later be amended to circumvent the introduction schedule. So, and that actually happened since we're talking about the voting bill. The original effort undertaken was governor approved, Maggie Toulouse-Oliver, Secretary of State approved, SB8. This was truly radical legislation that would have allowed votes to be collected and counted as late as the Friday after the election. So this was the original text, 16 and 17-year-olds voting, straight-line party ticket voting, automatic permanent absentee ballot in that as well. Felons coming right out of jail, they could be still in their orange jumpsuits and going right to the polls. So then SB 8 did not achieve much success, even among some of our liberal Democrats in this state. So they reworked it and reworked it, and it took multiple times, multiple amendments, and they still didn't have it to where they wanted it to be, and the Republicans were slowing down the work. So the Democrats said, we're going to take the text of this new revised bill and put it in a dummy bill, SB 144, and that's the one that ultimately failed at the very last second, with Senator Bill Scherer telling us all about the alignment of the moon and the sun and the stars and baseball history and score, various other things during his three-hour filibuster. So Bill did not pass, and it's one of the things that made this such a great session.
You know what this reminds me of is once upon a time when I was quite young, I term strategic omission. And I remember using that term in some conversation with one of my parents, and my dad looked at me and he said, sit down, son, I want to talk to you about something. He says, that is the same as lying. You know, lying. So when you start talking about this stuff and loopholes and other kinds of things, Paul, we need to call it what it is, and we need to return integrity to the way we do things, not trick each other along the process.
Yeah, well, politics, strategic omission is about the best we can ask for sometimes. And this session, like I said, it wound up being an okay session a lot their way through. And some good or bad issues that the governor wanted that really my organization, Rio Grande Foundation, didn't have too strong of a perspective on, things like the hydrogen bill. And exactly how that was all going to work was a little up in the air to me. But it's basically this idea that New Mexico was going to get a bunch of federal tax credits. You know, our politicians love to see what they can get out of Washington, D.C., and this was an effort like that. It's supposedly transition from putting gasoline in your car to someday using hydrogen in your car and that kind of thing. I'm not against it. It wasn't something we were going to jump full bore on. It didn't really get the fast track through the legislature. Really, there was some money put into the budget, but that was about it. Other things that the governor wanted was more aggressive crime legislation. We're not a crime, you know, bill organization. Crime is a serious issue. We have serious problems in Albuquerque especially, but that's not our forte and expertise. The governor really didn't get much of what she wanted, mostly because the progressive Democrats didn't want to be tough on crime in the way that the governor sees as an election year issue, and Republicans often are. And then there's other bills. The biggest one, the worst one, was the clean fuel standard that got amended with a day left in the session. Clean fuel standard would have been ethanol in your gas tank, 35 cents a gallon approximate increase in price when that was enacted. And that one wound up being incredible. It tied on the House floor, which essentially means unless you can dredge up another vote, it's dead. And that one, so SB 14, one of the governor's top priorities, moving through the session. And then they were going to try to grease the skids by, you know, we've talked about PNM. They put in a 3-month extension of PNM, the San Juan Generating Station in Farmington, the plant that's going to close down in June and is causing all this discussion of blackouts and brownouts come next summer. They were going to extend it by 3 months in the legislature by amending it into that bill, the Clean Fuel Standard. That bill, like I said, it failed in a tie vote on the House floor and failed for the session. So that was the one that we put down as the most big, bad, ugly bill of the entire session.
So PNM, and you actually brought this up on our show 4 or 5 months ago.
Way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, you came and said, look, PNM's already barking that they may not have enough electricity to support the residents of New Mexico, which, again, is a little bit around 2 million people throughout the whole state. But when it gets hot in New Mexico, it gets hot, and air conditioners are going to be on. And you may have, all of our listeners remember what happened in California a couple years ago where electrical service just went out literally for days. They had brownouts, blackouts. Temperatures were 100 degrees plus in many homes.
Mm-hmm. And last winter in Texas, which while Texas is a much more conservative place than California, they too have enacted some of these renewable or unreliable fuel policies to encourage wind and solar. And there's nothing wrong with a little bit of wind and solar when you have peaking in the electricity grid. But to really rely on that in a big way, you've got to have batteries. You've got to have all kinds of different components, new transmission, et cetera. And that was going to be, that is a very ambitious effort. So this was all put into place in 2019 by the Energy Transition Act, which has the provisions to shut down the San Juan Generating Station coal-fired power plant this coming summer. So shut down end of June, June 30th. Whoever wrote that into law, and we testified, we worked on this. I mean, we've been tuned into this bill since it was introduced in 2019. And somebody in the governor's office probably should have said, you know, that deadline of end of June in an election year, probably a date that we should avoid. So we looked at that date and I said, well, shoot, the governor's up for reelection in November. June may be okay because he got the power plant, but July and August are really hot too. What's going to happen then? And sure enough, you know, the excuse, of course, is COVID. Oh, supply chains. We haven't been able to get the solar and wind deployed. Well, that's all well and good. But, you know, so that bill died in the session, but there is a push. I just heard about it today that the PRC, so this is a regulatory body that also shares control of utilities, that they are going to be asked to do a 3-month extension for the power plant. But that doesn't get us to stable, reliable, affordable electricity in 2023, which is the next summer. That just gets us past Michelle Lujan Grisham's reelection bid. You don't want to be running for reelection at the time when you have rolling blackouts and the kind of issues that we will very clearly point to the Energy Transition Act of 2019, her bill of the Democrat legislature that really set us onto this unfortunate path.
Well, a couple details about energy. I understand that there are some carbon emissions technologies that could be deployed at the San Juan Generating Station that might even reduce emissions further, even though they've been reduced significantly. It's a coal-fired power plant. I had an interesting discussion. It really wasn't a discussion. It was almost like this person made a statement to me, and then I gave them an answer, and then they didn't respond. They literally just walked away from me. So I had this conversation with a more liberal person. I would call them a person that has ideals about, you know, everything being green and, you know, perfect renewable resources and all these different things. So I said to him, I said, why in the world are you so against having a coal-fired generation of electricity? And they said, well, because we're using up natural resources. So I looked at him and I said, what do you think goes into batteries?
Right.
And by the way, what happens to those batteries when they no longer work? Because we all know batteries do not have, you know, infinite lifespan. They do go bad. And of course, that's when the person turned around and walked away from me.
Yeah.
That seems to be the general sentiment for all of us that are trying to find out about. None of us, in my opinion, are against energy sources and renewable energy and things that work that we can afford. You've pointed that out very significantly. It needs to be affordable, but nobody wants to answer these other questions.
Yeah, I mean, you're right on. The lithium and other rare earth minerals that go into the batteries are a big issue. The mining of those takes place with a lot of fossil fuels, and it's not particularly pretty if you go to an open pit mine or something like that. Of course, there's a lot of copper and other things because you have to rework the entire power grid when you go renewable. You have to spread it out because the places you put a single power plant are not where you put the windmills and the solar panels. So that whole system has to be reworked, and that is incredibly resource intensive. And there's talk of spreading power lines, high tension power lines, through some very ecologically sensitive areas in New Mexico. And that really puts a lot of these environmentalists in a tough spot, because if this was a coal plant or a natural gas plant, they would be four square against it because, oh, you're ruining the scenery, et cetera. But now it's wind and solar, and that kind of puts them in a tough spot. But there are ways to do energy more green than it is done now. They've installed scrubbers on coal-fired power plants, made them much cleaner. What you're talking about is a plan, a group called Enchant Energy, is trying to take the CO2 and sequester it below ground and really make that a basically zero carbon coal plant, which is fantastic. And that's something that will, you know, really be important to New Mexico's future if they can get that done. And then the alternative. So the Republicans introduced their own bill in this session. It was to keep the power plant's life extended for 2 years to, you know, actually get beyond some of the supply chain issues and maybe get towards a more sustainable electrical grid. And then they would deem essentially, they would say that something called a combined cycle natural gas plant would qualify under New Mexico law as renewable or zero carbon energy. And we recall, we talked about this, the governor of California did exactly that to keep the lights on in that state, said, we got to keep natural gas going. Natural gas is by itself half the CO2 emissions of coal, and New Mexico has a lot of natural gas. And that's the kind of transition that a lot of people would have been able to get behind, either go with the CO2 sequestration or go with natural gas and really make that a bigger part of your grid. But due to the way PNM is implementing this Energy Transition Act, the problem will not be solved if we get past next summer. We're getting out of Palo Verde nuclear plant down in Arizona in 23 and 24. Four Corners, another coal-fired plant in Farmington, is coming offline for PNM's purposes in 24 as well. So we are on a very rapid trajectory towards zero carbon emissions in electricity. And that's all well and good, but we got to keep the lights on in the meantime.
Well, you talk about no carbon emissions, but it sounds like most of us better create a fire in our backyards with a grill on it, because we're not going to have any electricity or natural gas. We got to figure out a way to cook food.
Well, the Guessing family is definitely looking at generator options as a means of keeping the lights on. And there's generators are all over the place, cleaner, dirtier, whatever. But certainly everybody investing in a generator to keep their lights on this summer is not green, simply the materials alone, let alone the propane or the diesel or whatever's going into those generators, is not good for the environment. So a good electrical, stable electrical grid is where we should be. And it's a shame that we've gotten to this point. We'll see what the PRC does. They will be pressured by some of the true radicals, environmentalists, who say PNM's blowing smoke. They don't actually need to keep this plant open. We're going to go full bore this summer, this June, and it's going to be fascinating to watch. Just wait.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Paul, this is not on our list, but I can't help but bring up what happened with that San Francisco-based school board that basically got rid of three board members because they were worried about everything except getting kids back into school. Were you surprised, number one, that that recall election went as rapidly as it did and those people were voted out as quickly as they were?
Well, I followed it from afar. I do know that parents are the new kind of right of center interest group in our country and potentially here in our state. You know, sometimes it's fun, and I'll get to the San Francisco thing, but as being the head of the organization, you know, as we are looking at what's happening in the legislature, it's sometimes worth looking at the dogs that don't bark, the things that are in the background that we kind of ignore because nobody in the legislature really considers them. And for all the heat and noise and righteous outrage among parents across the country about what's happened to the schools and their kids, we didn't have any real school choice considered. That's because this is a Democrat-dominated state, and the Democrats are dominated by the teachers' unions, and that is the group that pushes status quo. Now, what happened in San Francisco was even more absurd than maybe what we've done in New Mexico. There were schools named after prominent figures, I believe George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Dianne Feinstein, of all people, and they ripped the names down of all three of them. Like, it's not just the man who had slaves, Washington, or the man who freed the slaves, Lincoln, but wasn't always perfect on race. And then Dianne Feinstein, who you think, well, she's a big liberal. She should be somebody who they support. So this school board in San Francisco, while they're keeping the kids out of the classroom, keeping them out of school, you know, in the COVID milieu, if it were, they were focused on other things. Their schools' resources were not being administered in the correct way. And it did help that the mayor of San Francisco, London Breed, supported the recall. But yeah, I think it just shows you that there are limits to an extent if you give people the ability to weigh in directly on a group of people that have just gone so far out to la-la land and aren't dealing with the important issues that they can be vulnerable. That's certainly what we're hoping for to an extent here in New Mexico as well.
Yes. Well, if our listeners could see the list of all the things we're going to talk about today, recounting the activity at the New Mexico legislative session and this past session, which ended yesterday, you would think there's no way you're going to get through this in the remaining half an hour, but we're sure going to try. Paul Gessing will be right back. Stay with us.
We're surrounded by traumatic events. It can make you feel powerless.
How can I help? How can I make a difference?
The International Fellowship of Chaplains provides training to meet the physical, emotional, and spiritual needs of victims during times of crisis. IFOC will be holding a training at Calvary Chapel Southwest March 21st through the 25th. Discount available if registered by February 21st. For more information about the training or registration, call 270-5839, abqchaplaincorps.org.
The largest investment for a family is their home. For decades, Carlos Griego and the team at Bosque Home Services has been taking care of houses. Now, here is Carlos talking with Jim Williams about some of the most common issues homeowners need to know about.
Carlos, what if you've had a slow leak? Maybe you don't even know it's behind the wall. How dangerous is black mold to people?
Honestly, it's bigger here than it is anywhere. So my business partner, he ran a company in California for 20 years. Doing mold mitigation, restoration, flood damage, and that's why we do that here as well. We've done more mold mitigation here in the past 3 years than he's done in 20 years in California.
Bosque Home Services, online at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200. That's HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200. Imagine the challenge we faced. Skip Heitzig has taught over 3,500 through the Bible messages, and we had to pick the top 10 for a special resource offer. So here's a sample of what we chose.
Are we in the last days? Yes, but we've been in the last days for 2,000 years. The time between the first coming of Christ and the second coming of Christ falls under the designation the last days.
This power-packed set of Skip's top 10 teachings are messages you will want to hear and share.
And one of the things I love about God is he's not complicated. Most truth you will discover is simple truth. Not simplistic truth, simple truth.
When you give $35 or more today, we'll also include Lenya Heitzig's book, Reload Love. The history of a ministry that's been helping children victimized by terror on the front lines. Get Skip's top 10 messages on CD, plus your copy of Reload Love by Lenya Heitzig today. Call 800-922-1888 to give or visit connectwithskip.com.
KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect would like to thank Essenmacher Family Dental for their support of KLYT, with services including children's dentistry, preventive dentistry, and more. Their new Albuquerque office is located at 8310 Palomas Avenue Northeast, Suite C, 505-372-0086, or online at snmacherdental.com. Paul Gessing is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, and you can find out more details about everything we're talking to Paul about today at riograndefoundation.org, or you can go to their podcast site, which is errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, I appreciate so much that you're here, and you're here on a regular basis and contributing and supporting us, and I really know it takes a lot of time, and I do appreciate all the work you did in the legislative session because you were on top of everything.
Well, thanks. We definitely tried, and like I said, it wound up being a pretty darn okay session as sessions go. But we can do better in New Mexico. We have to do better this last 2 years in particular. But really, since Governor Lujan Grisham came into office, she's done exactly the opposite of what I would like to do, except for some issues this session, which we're going to talk about. And this is all really focusing on November, whether it's my nine-year-old daughter, when I picked her up from school yesterday and I told her that the masks were coming off, the governor had finally lifted the mandate, and she said, "Those Democrats, they're always trying to look for that next election and doing the right thing when that election's coming." And I said, "Yep, you really know your stuff. You might teach a political science course someday." So,
well, of course, I hear the rhetoric coming from the right, and they're all saying, "Oh yeah, we're going to dominate November. We're going to do this and that." And I think back to times when Republicans, especially at the federal level, have been in charge of the House and the Senate. We've had a Republican in the White House. And, Paul, I sit back and I go, okay, our listeners, myself included, we believe in biblical principles. And we don't necessarily want to jam the Bible down somebody's throat. But when you just talk about principles that are true, 99% of them are, you're just basically quoting biblical principles. It's not like there's 200 million ways to spend money. But Michelle Lujan Grisham just got, what, $6 or $7 billion extra dollars and increased our budget by $1 billion?
Well, she got an additional billion. So we're at $8.5 billion in annual spending. That's a 14% increase in a single year. She's increased spending in her other years as governor. But, yeah, 14%, $1 billion over a single year is a lot of money going out the door. And I suspect a lot of it is not going to do a great deal for average New Mexicans. That doesn't mean that there's not some good things that came along, but, free college. Well, that's SB 140. We've already had free college in New Mexico. It was called the lottery scholarship. But then when UNM and the bureaucracies realized, hey, we can kind of raise the tuition level and we've got a captured audience, then it started to not be enough money. So the legislature was appropriating funds to keep that lottery scholarship program going. And now the governor and the legislature passed a bill to make so-called permanence, you never know, the free college thing. It won't be tied to the lottery scholarship, but you can bet that the bureaucrats and the leaders at our institutes of higher learning are licking their chops because now they have, in some ways, an unlimited budget.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out and if it's actually free college or maybe they pay for part of it. It'll be interesting to see how that happens. Now, we are in our last segment today going to talk about some tax cuts, which you would say are pretty good. But one of the things on your list is talking about the governor's powers in emergencies. And I think you were hopeful, even on the Democrat side of the aisle, that people were recognizing that maybe Michelle Lujan Grisham was overstepping her bounds as the governor in exercising these powers during even the last year when we weren't necessarily facing an emergency.
Yeah, we have a very broad and powerful law that empowers the governor in this state. And in a short-term emergency, terrorist attack, natural disaster, it may be wise to have all power kind of put into one person. This is something that the Native Americans, if you read their histories, you know, they really kind of had an anarchist in many tribes approach. But then they went to war, and that's when they had a chief. And it's the same way with every civilization, basically. When you have a crisis, you need to centralize authority. Well, an emergency typically does not go on for 2 years, which is basically where we are at this point in the governor's term in office. And legislation has been introduced in the last session, the 60-day session in 2021. It was introduced in this session, bipartisan, just to give the legislators a seat at the table after, say, 30 days that you had an emergency in place. The legislature should come back in and say, yes, we approve or we disapprove of this. Now, the bills as formulated, in my opinion, were way too lenient. I think there also needs to be a definition, some kind of effort to describe an emergency, because we have a partisan Democrat legislature. Chances are, if you had a vote on one of these bills in the session, you would have, in a, you know, on a, the governor comes back and needs approval for 30 days or 60 days. Chances are very good that this legislature would have gone along with whatever the governor wanted to do. So I think there needs to be additional teeth in that. And that's actually something that the Rio Grande Foundation is going to be working on as a top priority between now and Election Day. We're going to be collecting pledges from politicians and elected officials or wannabe elected officials to put them on the record saying, hey, we want the legislature, the elected body of New Mexico, to have a say in future emergencies, that one person rule is not a good thing. And finally, we talked about SB 144. We talked about some of these election bills. And I attended hearings. I testified in hearings. And the rhetoric from the other side, you know, if you don't support 16 and 17-year-olds voting, you're supporting Jim Crow and you're racist. I mean, that was paraphrasing exactly what was said in some of these committees. Well, if you have a democracy or even a republic, I mean, I'm much more on the republic side as opposed to a straight democracy person, but the idea is about governance, not just about how you elect the officials, but what they actually do when they're there. Having one person manage the affairs of 2 million people, that's not democracy. That's not a elected, you know, representative republic. It's a totalitarian dictatorship, and that's inflammatory rhetoric, but that's what it is. You have to define it. It's one part person rule. That's not at all what the founding fathers had in mind.
Well, and Paul, when you talk about, I mean, I think a lot of people don't understand the difference between the republic we live in and a democracy. A democracy's majority rule.
Yes.
And our founding fathers created our representative republic so that even one person could be recognized and their view would be seen as valuable.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Constitution is based on the idea of having checks and balances. I mean, you have a judiciary, you have the executive, you have the legislature. That is anti-small d democratic. By small d, I mean not Democratic Party or Republican Party, but Democrat concepts. The U.S. Senate is inherently anti-democratic. So is the First Amendment, because if you have a First Amendment that protects speech, well, if you are saying what everybody else is saying already, then you don't need the First Amendment. You need the First Amendment when you're the one or two or whatever people out saying something that is unpopular. Gun rights, the Second Amendment. I mean, the whole Constitution, a lot of things that if you really sit them down and talk to them, even most left-wing progressives actually will say they support it, because the idea of a true majoritarian democracy has been tried, it's failed, and most people can understand why it's not where we want to go.
Amen. Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio. We're going to have one more segment with Paul. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some positive things like tax cuts. We'll be right back on ABQ Connect.
Calvary Church Elementary is now accepting applications for the 2022 school year. Join our growing community of families that value Christian education with a loving emphasis on whole child instruction, educating the student academically, physically, spiritually, and socially. Learn about our biblical form of instruction known as Paideia. For more information and online applications, go to calvarychurchelementary.com or call 338-4848. 338-4848.
At Albuquerque Christian Children's Home, we believe that children are truly a gift from God. That's why we open our arms and our hearts to children who have been abused, neglected, or abandoned. Children who are hurting and scared. Although we have lots of love to give, care also takes dollars. You can help provide a safe haven for these children by making a tax-deductible donation online at acchkids.org or by calling us at 898-5520.
I'm Jonathan McKee, and you're listening to Plugged In. Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock, is a reboot of Jim Henson's beloved 1980s show. Like the original, the reboot aims to teach some light lessons. Be kind to other people, or don't force them to do things they don't want to do. Some lessons can lean a bit holistic. Today's typical everything's acceptable morality. But Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock primarily embraces one ethos. Clean, zany, muppety fun. Jim Henson himself called the original Fraggle Rock a lot of silliness. Apple TV Plus's version has no greater ambition than to bring that silliness to a new generation while again charming an older one. Before streaming the latest shows, visit PluggedIn.com/radio. I'm Jonathan McKee for Focus on the Family's Plugged In.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation in studio. And if you want more detail about what we're talking about today, you can go to riograndefoundation.org or you can go to errorsofenchantment.com and you can get a lot of details. Paul writes and provides all of this information to the public. They are interested in helping us have freedom from overbearing government. Paul, tell us more about the Rio Grande Foundation.
Yeah, we're a nonprofit. We are a think tank, but we don't just sit around and think. We very much engage with the public. We have regular events around Albuquerque, around the state. I'll be traveling a fair amount here after the end of the session or as the session ends to share what happened and where things are going next in the state of New Mexico. You can sign up for our email list at riograndefoundation.org. You can find out more about events that we're having. And I also strongly encourage everybody listening to check out our Freedom Index, which is our legislative scorecard initiative where we have been ranking bills and rating them on their positive and negative impacts on average New Mexicans' freedom. And we rate them only when they get to the floor. So unfortunately, there's bills that do not get heard because of who controls the session. But this process enables us to also rate legislators themselves. And, you know, it's not enough that somebody has an R by their name. That doesn't make them a fiscal conservative, pro-freedom. Just like somebody with a D by their name doesn't always make them a hard left liberal either. Now, it pretty much holds in Albuquerque, admittedly, but you get more rural areas, you get a little more diversity outside of the big city here.
Well, Paul, I think that we were talking about San Francisco and the actions of that school board and the overwhelming response from voters in those communities to get rid of those board members. Was that a surprise to Democrats nationally?
You know, I think the Democrats do see a lot of writing on the wall, you know, when people are talking about the governor's decision on masks as well as the governor's decision to put tax cuts on the agenda. Biden is certainly not acquitted of himself particularly well. A lot of Democrats have been very limiting in their approaches to individual freedom and masking, and they just overplayed their hand in a lot of ways. And even San Francisco voters said, you know, enough is enough. We're going to focus on school board members who are going to actually consider the schools as their top priority and managing them, not getting on to all these social issues that have nothing to do with making sure our kids learn.
So is there going to be a little bit more money back in the pockets of taxpayers in New Mexico from this point forward?
There is, in a sense. Now, I want to preface this by saying that inflation is kind of out of control right now. So just because you have more dollars to spend doesn't mean those dollars are buying more. I also want to say that we spent, or the legislature spent, as we said, a little over $1 billion additional. So they grew government by $1 billion. Now, the tax cuts that I'm going to talk about here briefly are about a $400 million annual reduction in revenue. But they are good, and they do help average New Mexicans. So here I'm going to talk, running through the list, with the approximate amount that the fiscal impact statements of the legislature say that they will reduce revenue. That gives you an idea of how big they are relative to each other. So a child tax credit of $25 to $175 per child. I assume that's going to be based on income. I haven't seen all the details. It's small to each individual family, but if you're getting, you know, if you got two, three, four kids, that could add up. That's $74 million is what they expect. And that's nice. It is what it is. $1,000 nurse tax credit. So if you've been a nurse over the last year, you get $1,000. That's $9 million, spent essentially. Military pensions, way below the radar. It's been an issue that a lot of military retirees have talked about. They've been lobbying in Santa Fe for some time. But now pensions are going to be tax exempt starting out at $10,000. So everything, if you get a military pension, $10,000 and below is tax exempt, $20,000 for the next year in 2023, and then up to $30,000 of your military pension in 24, 25, and 26. And this does have a deadline or a phase out. So after that, we don't know, but that'll definitely help folks who are on military pensions consider New Mexico or live here if they already are here. So security tax exemption wasn't completely eliminated, but and that was $15 million, by the way, for the military pension issue. So security tax, they didn't completely eliminate it. They did dramatically increase the ability for people to come here and not have their Social Security taxed. $100,000 for single, $150,000 if you're married. All of that below that level is exempt from taxation on Social Security by the state of New Mexico. That's $85 million. Now, the gross receipts tax reduction. So when you pay in Albuquerque right now, it's 7.875. The state portion of that is 5.125. So the state reduced that by a quarter or an eighth of a percent to 4.875. And they will do that unless revenues go down by 5% or more. So if the state sees a decline in revenues, say oil and gas prices drop, this will be put on hold. But that's $200 million. That shows you just how much that gross receipts tax really generates for the state. So you can look for that probably to kick in July. And, of course, the city of Albuquerque is also working on gross receipts tax reductions currently. So it could be very nice. And then deductions on certain business inputs for manufacturers. We've talked about the way contractors have to pay taxes on business inputs, accountants, bookkeepers, et cetera, $5.6 million, but interestingly, just on manufacturers. And then top it all off, $1.5 million by eliminating the gross receipts tax on feminine hygiene products. So for the ladies out there, if you go and buy those presumably in July, you will not be incurring gross receipts tax on
that. But that's significant. That's over 7%.
Yeah, it is. And it's a $1.5 million tax reduction. So that is a lot of good stuff. I mean, with the caveats that inflation is out of control, and so everything is going up for you. And then gas prices are also way up. So New Mexicans are partially funding the state government through all the gasoline they buy at the pump. That then goes, because the prices are so high, that goes into the coffers of the state of New Mexico. But these are good policy. They were bipartisan, and it's HB 163. If you want to go in and look And we rated that as one of the very best bills, if not the best bill of the entire session.
And Paul, what I like about meeting with you and others and other people are your friends, like Carla Sontag with the New Mexico Business Coalition. I know you guys are friends. You talk, you have similar ideas, but not in agreement on everything. But I want our listeners to have your resources at the Rio Grande Foundation and your Freedom Index as a guide to start learning about all of this right now, because we're going to have midterms. You're going to see the Democrats having elections to have people running for legislative positions, state positions in June. And you're going to have the Republicans doing the same thing. And then the election happens in November. We are going to be electing a new governor and most of our legislators. And it would be really good to start now to get prepared and really look at that. And if you're voting your Bible and you're interested in doing that, find out about the positions that each one of these individuals has, and then measure what they want against what you believe and your faith commitment is. And I think that would be a great formula for being ready to vote and prepare yourself.
Absolutely. And RioGrandeFoundation.org. Look at that website, the Freedom Index, and find out about your legislators. Find out who they are, because you do have to it helps to know who those people are. And then I would encourage folks, and there's been redistricting, so all those lines have been redrawn. So you might have been in legislator X and Y's district, a representative and a senator, and now you might be in Z and A's district because of redistricting. That kind of thing happens. So you do have to keep up on these things a little bit. That's changing as we head into the election. So we had all this controversy, this discussion about redistricting. That was one of the special sessions we had over the summer. The redistricting will affect us as we hit the November election. So it does require a little bit of self-education and information searching, because things do change in the political process, especially in a redistricting year like we're in right now.
Paul, there were a couple of issues that a lot of people that listen to our radio station were concerned about, one being abortion. It didn't look like much happened with right-to-life issues in this legislative session. I don't know how Ethel Maharg and others with the Right to Life and Karenette and others see that. Maybe they feel like they dodged a bullet, or maybe they were hopeful that things would really change around. But the bottom line is that people are going to have to vote in November if they're really worried about those kind of issues, and elect people that are like-minded about those things. And in order to find that out, you got to start now, because none of this is easy to figure out.
Absolutely. Yeah. We try to do as much in terms of voter education and public education as possible. But it's not simple, straightforward stuff. And there's a lot of issues. We've got the entire House in the legislature is up for election this November. We've got the governor's race, of course. And then we've got Secretary of State, Attorney General, and I'll throw something at you. I may not have even had this on the topics list. So before we go, the Attorney General, he is retiring, Hector Balderas. He's not retiring. His time in office, 8 years, is done. He's term limited. But there's a lawsuit going on right now, this Berkeley, California, hard left area. And they have a rule that they're not allowing natural gas hookups in homes and businesses. So there's a lawsuit between the city of Berkeley and the California Restaurant Association, which is saying, whoa, among other things, our members, restaurants, cook on gas stoves, and we find the quality of food better, it's quicker, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lawsuit. Hector Balderas, as the Attorney General of New Mexico, a very energy reliant state, producing state, has signed the state onto what's called an amicus brief, or a friend of the court brief, in which we are supporting Berkeley in their effort to not allow natural gas hookups in homes and any new construction businesses. So these people all have important roles that they play. Quite frankly, that's not the role I think an attorney general should play, especially in a high crime environment like we have here in New Mexico. The Attorney General should be riding herd on prosecutors and the legal system to really crack down on crime. But instead, our Attorney General currently is, you know, looking at natural gas appliances in Berkeley, California.
Paul, this isn't on our list either, but I can't help but think about the judges.
Yep.
What role do the judges play in preventing crime in our state?
And this is quite honestly one of my biggest frustrations. And I would encourage you to have some judges on, judge candidates, because it, as much as the governor wanted to push some crime stuff in her, in this session, I really look at the judges as the epicenter of the crime problem. If the judges do not keep people behind bars, they will go out and recommit the crimes. Whether you support or oppose what's called pretrial detention, the abolishment of bail and all of that system, if you have judges that are letting thugs and hoodlums out to commit more crimes, you need to change the judges. And it's tough. I get it. Judges, all the other voting stuff, at least you have an R or a D by their name so you can kind of grasp where they're coming from. Judges don't have any of that. You just have to figure it out, and they can't even run a regular campaign. I would be first in line to support an effort to change that system to allow judges to have more leeway in terms of how they campaign, probably in a partisan banner, but it is tough. You've got to look at the judges as well. They are very important.
I'm going to take your advice, and we'll try to get some of those on. Paul, I'm always having a great time talking with you. Sometimes I get really worried, but I know the man upstairs is going to take care of us.
We had a good session this time.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.